Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how you doing, mate?
I am delighted to be here. And you?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty stoked about this conversation. I think it's going to be interesting.
You know, every once in a while we get to zig where often we zag. Zag where often we zig or something. But have a conversation is just fundamentally different about the world of marketing these days. So I have high hopes for this one.
Yeah, no, I think it should be interesting and hopefully takes us in a lot of cool and unique directions that I don't think we've explored before. So
time will tell. We may have to edit that part out if it ends up being not cool and new.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be. So joining us today is Alec Graham. Alec is the marketing manager at LEL International. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Alec.
Hi, it's my pleasure to be here.
Alec, I really want to know, what is LEL International? What do y'all do there?
So let me start it off with LEL is probably one of the most probabilistic companies that I've ever encountered. And that comes from there's multiple business streams. There's LEL Critical, there's LEL Decom, there's LEL CX, and there's LEL International. And each one kind of powers each other in this beautiful, chaotic ecosystem that they've created. So that's what initially drew me to this company. They operate a lot less like a traditional corporate structure and more like this brilliant accident that started generating serious profit and now we're learning scale with intention. And so what that is today we manufacture generator enclosures for both mobile and stationary solutions. Where it got kind of interesting is it grew naturally out of it, not building these enclosures, but actually sourcing scrap metal and generators, critical power equipment. And from sourcing this equipment, you go to the end customer. What do you do with that equipment? Well, what we want to do is we buy it from you, we package it, and now we're starting to do all the ancillary things that leads us to solve problems for our clients.
That's very cool. How did you end up there, Alec? How long have you been with LEL?
I've been with LEL for about 9 months now. So my journey started at a little company called EPC Power. So for all you B2B manufacturing marketers out there, the EPC in that name actually does not stand for engineering, procurement, and construction. It's just something that they said, well, we need a name. Let's choose one. And it ended up being this huge phenomenal thing in the inverter industry, which was EPCs.
A lot of, three-letter acronyms here.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why my brain keeps leading to these companies. I just like them, I guess. So EPC was a little teeny tiny company when I first met them. I was in the warehouse and I was just organizing stock and trying to rearrange how they did things more efficiently. Funny enough, it was where I got a lot of my interest into UI UX because when I was storing things, I'm 6 feet tall, I'm a little bit of a tall guy, but our stocking clerk who would come in and move the parts from the warehouse down to the manufacturing engineers, well, she was 5 feet. So when I was rearranging all the inventory and I was saying, okay, I'm going to put it way above my head, and she was about 55 at the time, well, she can't reach and take a 60-pound box that is, for someone who is 6 feet tall, way above his head, move it down to her level, and then take it away from there. So I had to readjust the entire system for her. And that really got me thinking and interested in how do you solve solutions for everybody, from your customer to your employees, and how do you build lengthy operating systems that are good for everybody that improves the efficiency and the experience along the way for your customers and employees.
Man, those little epiphanies of empathy, you know, where you get to see something you didn't necessarily consider and how it's impacted others and then take that into your work and internalize it and kind of bring it forward. I find that very interesting, you know.
Well, I think we all have to as marketers. We exist in this really ambiguous space where sometimes the answer is, of course, to do the wrong thing or to do the wrong thing multiple times. When you're existing in an environment where the average can be an extremely useful tool, but it can also be a very dangerous thing, the reason that outliers are so important is that you can build around the outlier and you can usually find it in a very lucrative environment built around the 1%. And once you optimize for the 1% and you get them to love the product, you can usually scale that down to make a whole lot of people like the product.
I think this is kind of knocking on the door of what we said we were going to talk about today, which is kind of this notion that some of the magic of marketing isn't initially obvious, and doesn't come from the output or the deliverable that's created necessarily. Help me understand how you think about it. Like when you say that, when you talk about how in some ways the process is the valuable part of the work.
I can get into it where I was looking at our critical inventory, which is chillers, coolers, generators, that sort of ordeal. And where does the customer go to finally acquire our product? So you start with, sales, marketing, you bring them in, you have something sort of fun where you get to optimize there for SEO or UI and UX, where you have, instead of show me our inventory, you could say, show me my generators or my chillers or my cooling towers, whatever the reason that people have come to us for, which I think American Airlines and Delta have done experiments on this, and you can optimize for about 5% increased success rates if you would show people and add a personal identifier to it. About changing the actual context of the conversation. And then you go into, you bring it into the company, and then how do we do that in the company? Where do you get the entire process from the company from? You have logistics coming in, you have the customer service aspect coming in, and there's so many different avenues that go down to it. So when I started exploring that in our company, one of the things that I found is we didn't really have a customer service team. The customer service team would come in way too late. There wasn't a proper handoff, and just nothing really happened. The customers were left high and dry, and there wasn't enough information, and then products would arrive or they would go, and no one would really know what was going on. So the first step there, and this is the process of generating advertisements, would be we found out that we need a customer service team so that we can actually properly push people through the flow. So now when people come in, once the deal happens, because people are willing to do up to $500,000 on digital sales, I think there have been a couple findings about that have come out in B2B environments. So we have more and more people who are doing digital sales. You have a customer service team who now is not on the sales side, but someone who is solely dedicated to the experience of your customer. So from there, how do you move that through your internal team? Going to logistics, how do you make sure logistics has everything that they need, that they're doing their job, that they're being effective, so when the customer actually wants to order a product, they can actually get it delivered at the time they need it delivered. And from there, you can move on, as I did, to then the warehousing and service team, which would be how do you make sure that the warehousing and service team are making sure the product actually works, making sure the product is clean, and making sure that the product has all of its fluids and everything replaced. And then, now that you have all the product put together of it's clean, it works, and it's ready to go out, all right, where's the next step? Is packaging the product to actually have a user manual that you can put with that product to say whether it's from yourself or the OEM, depending on what you're shipping with that product, and giving the user, here's a quick way to set up the product, and here's a quick way to use the product. And so when you get into that from marketing, it doesn't all come around and you think of it as a marketing process. But it's you're increasing your surface area to exposure for positive upside optionality. So you're putting more out there for your marketing self to be involved in your company. And the more you can optimize for the experience, as we tend to do, you can make your whole company better from a structure.
Are you fundamentally advocating that marketing is more than the voice of the company, but more importantly, maybe it's the voice of the customer inside of the company?
I think you have to be. There are so many bad actors in the space, not just in marketing, but in general, where they talk about this a lot. And I believe the book is called Nudge by Richard Thaler and Cass Sustin. They talk very heavily about sludge in companies and outside of companies. If you take a company where they're putting a ton of sludge in, very easy example is with subscriptions. We all know that there's subscriptions that you've signed up for, and then you go to the fine print and you say, if you want to cancel the subscription, even though you signed on online, you have to fly to Indiana, you have to go in person, you have to yell at the owner to say, hey, take me off your dang list. I don't want to be subscribed anymore, which is ridiculous, which is why Britain and the United States are all looking at changing laws to make sure that it's as easy to unsubscribe as it was to actually subscribe. And even in B2B businesses, there are people who implement this sludge just to make it as worse as possible, and they've run away with $20,000, and you realize that they didn't actually do anything for you.
So you're customer advocacy is basically the anecdote to that?
I would say so, that the customer advocacy is making sure your customer is taken care of inside your company, reducing sludge, or the only sludge you're putting in is to help them in the long run.
I like that. But I want to latch on to some turn of phrase you used a few moments ago, increasing surface area, you know, and kind of exposing different elements to outside perspective and to learning. You know, it's kind of, there's a similar kind of concept in cooking, or around kind of increasing surface area of proteins and things like that to create more crispy bits. So, you know, you're kind of like looking to create more crispy bits within the organization by offering more opportunities for, you know, for customers or heat to reach them. That's pretty cool. I like that as a notion.
You have to be interested in people and a lot of things as a marketer. I think one of the most fun anecdotes I ever heard was, if you're an accountant and you sit down in a coffee shop, you're probably not going to get better at accounting, but you could very well be a better marketer because you sit down and you watch people how actually operate and go about their day. More and more in companies, as people look for solutions which operate off of efficiency, you have to look at what is nonsense and what actually makes the experience better for them that doesn't actually increase the efficiency, but will long-term increase the efficacy of your employees because they're happier, they like the process better. How do you make things just easier? The whole point, I guess what I would say, is marketing should be put in that role because we have a tendency to try to make people happier.
How do you find that squares against the general, if you will, inclinations of a corporation? That the, you know, an organization, an apparatus that's built around trying to encourage efficiencies, reduce spend, maximize return, etc. Feels like it might be difficult soil for this idea to gain purchase in.
It is, because marketers have really bought into that idea where we say, oh yeah, we can definitely prove that everything we're doing is very valuable. I always like the example of an airlines, again, Delta or American, who have purchased a Boeing or another aircraft of innumerable cost, you know, $320,000, $500,000. And they say, okay, we have this grand, fantastic airplane. Let's talk about what we're serving on board, the sandwiches, the soups, the salads, whatever we're going to sell. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's just absolute nonsense, right? Why would you possibly show off those services when it's not the product that we actually bought? There's no direct one-to-one correlation with that. And you have to think about that in companies when you're going off of, okay, I know we're not going to be seeing direct revenue from this, but, you know, 6-8 months down the line, there's the fantastic story of with Jaguar's new branding that they're doing, of a kid who saw a Jaguar commercial when he was 12, and now he's looking to go buy as many Jaguars as he can. And he's one of the largest Jaguar owners in the world, but it's because he saw a commercial when he was 12. Now, what's the return on investment on that? You can't directly tie back that campaign all the way then. Just like with those higher cost customer channels, such as trade shows, things like that, when I talked about earlier, you are increasing your surface area for exposure to positive upside optionality, which is not a quote I came up with. I can't remember his name now. I think it's Tim Taub. You're putting yourself out there to become more likely in ways you never expected. And it's really hard to justify that expense to a CEO or a CFO especially, which is why it's kind of the death rattle of a company when the CFO becomes the CEO, because then everything has to have this one-to-one direct return. And really, a lot of CEOs have to operate off of the potentiality of a business, which is how LEL has operated as we have gone into more and more environments, more and more customer universes. We have found more and more gold there, and we keep digging. Sometimes we don't hit a big vein, or sometimes we find nothing at all, but every now and then you find this big mountain of gold just waiting there, and you dig it right up, which none of that would happen if you're operating off of a deterministic specter of one-to-one.
So the CEO needs to have faith that there's a little magic.
I think most do. I think that is what Rory Sutherland talks a lot about in his book Alchemy. Derived from the name itself, is that there's so much magic in marketing itself, and you can't directly tie what all of it is. And in fact, you usually have that flat surface area to go all the way around and to hit people on a large basis so you can eventually pull someone in.
You know, I'm picking up what you're putting down. I'm not going to disagree with you or Rory, frankly. It, I guess, how have you found advocating for these ideas in an industrial manufacturing space? I mean, in some ways, these are not the CEOs and CFOs that are famous for having a little bit of faith in their thinking.
Well, in the United States, I think it would be a really good discussion if we could look at the extraordinary rates of economic growth that we've experienced directly tied to the veneration of sales and marketing. So as we tie down those experiences, I'm looking back and I think you had this one idea I had at a trade show, which was, why don't we bring in a comedian who is familiar with the idea of electricity, inverters, and that sort of device, bring him in, start talking, have him either just walk around the booth or we have a show where he's up there for a little while. Well, the director at the time really hated that idea. He's like, these are engineers, they don't like to laugh. When I think if you really look at it, people would love that topic. They want something unique. You don't want to be exactly like all your other competitors who have the same staunch graphics that say we have 99.9% uptime, and you go in there and there's no actual proof and you just have the sales guy talking your ear off. Hmm. You need to have your marketing around there with that little bit of magic.
I wonder, one of the things I think that has happened in the industrial manufacturing space over the last five or so years, maybe a bit more than that, is, you know, it used to be said, oh, well, they're digital laggards, you know, they haven't invested. I think that's largely not the case anymore. I mean, it's, some of the, when you think about some of the PIM systems, ERP integrations and things of that nature powered by large manufacturers, I mean, those are very advanced digital presence and advanced marketing executions. I'm kind of wondering if we're kind of sitting at the precipice of, a world in a time when what you're suggesting isn't that foreign or that challenging for a manufacturing or industrial CEO. You know, maybe they've gotten their head around this a little bit more.
It might be true, and I'd be interested to know how AI is going to affect that space too. So as they're trying to wrap their mind around all these different spaces, how they differentiate themselves, and as they go to the reliance on AI to create products and you get even closer together than you might have ever been before, are there going to be more explosive outcomes where people would just suddenly go off the walls, you know, batshit crazy, and do something completely unrecognizable to everyone else?
Mm. Yeah, in some ways, it's a category that has had to deal with AI and automation in many cases before the consumer categories has, right? You know, there's they're knocking on the door of AI. It's not pure AI, but industrial automation, Industry 4.0, et cetera, versus if you think about consumer categories, you know, haven't been maybe as impacted by that. I don't know.
Well, that's where you go with like ABB and their marketing, which they are a very heavy automotive industry, which they showcase all their fancy tech and robot arms who are building all of their different devices and things like that. But the real outreach of operating off of LLMs and deterministic versus probabilistic AI to actually do your marketing for you and how you reach out to your customers. It's an interesting space where you get into, where you have your Starbucks, where there was the recent actual people revolting against Starbucks because, oh boy, now it's too slow to get my coffee. When before that was the whole business model of it being slow to get my coffee. Versus the implementation of, you know, the robots, you know, the AI, whatever you want to call it, of the self-scanning that you could say that's in grocery stores, or even the idea that came around and it happened when my grandfather was running Marshall's stores, of putting in RFID codes onto all of the products so that you could just walk out the door and it would just go straight to your credit card and you'd be charged. But then there was also this unique revolution that came about of slow checkout, same thing, where you would have to slow down and you want to get to the checkout so that someone would talk to you. And there have been some stores who have also been starting to implement that. So as you go into this AI space where, you know, how quickly do you want it? It's hard to beat for like email, instantaneous and free. But is that the best model? Would it be better if something was a little bit slower and took a little bit more time? Would people appreciate that more?
Man, as the person who always gets stuck behind the lady that is just looking for someone to speak with, you know, I'm not the guy for that, but I can see it. And I think it takes looking at it from the perspective that, you know, most people are talking about how fast we can get through things and how quickly we can get it out the door and how, you know, so what's the opposite of that? How do we differentiate with that? Who are the types of customers that might benefit or want that kind of extra touch point along the way to increase the stickiness with you and the business? Seems like an interesting concept.
Well, I think you can get to that where you have to prepare your customer or prepare yourself for the experience you're going to have. If you're going to a hibachi place, typically you're going to say, oh, this is pretty just terrible because it takes forever to get your food. There's some guy in front of you cooking and you got to sit around with all these other people very close shoulder to shoulder. If you were just going expecting a normal restaurant, it'd be terrible. However, if you prepare yourself that I'm going to a hibachi place where it's going to take an extra 2 hours to get my food, but it's going to be wonderful and I get to talk to the guy right in front of me who's actually cooking the food and he's doing tricks, then it might be a really wonderful experience.
Context is everything.
So where's this going? You've been with the firm for 9 months. I'm assuming in some ways that your approach to marketing, your way you think about this is what attracted the firm to you. How do you, as you kind of look in the crystal ball over the next 12 to 24 months, what do you see as being the mountain that needs to be climbed here? What's the big challenge ahead?
I think the biggest challenge, so I would say that there's a couple things. Is first, optimizing for the digital and AI age is going to be really challenging, especially for this kind of services that we are offering, sort of like national level storage and communicating those ideas very quickly, rapidly, and quickly. And with Google optimizing for those short little Google snippets, how do we really convey that if we don't have pricing on our e-commerce site, right? If we have a generator that we're offering, but we can't say what the exact price is because either the OEM will get upset with us or because we want to be able to negotiate on the price, how do we draw customers in with those? Now, you also go into some other larger marketing ideas, which is communicating a larger sales category, expanding the customer universe across this. As I said, we're probabilistic, so we're going to so many different sales avenues at once, spreading ourselves a little bit thin, which can be problematic for companies. And how do we really effectively attack that from a marketing perspective to go into these different channels, especially with our leaders here, that they are probabilistic, but they are not advocates of these higher cost customer channels. They want to see what is possible with the efficacy of the transaction. How quick can you make the transaction with it being as with the largest payout possible? Hmm. And they're really optimizing for that end. And so the biggest challenge is, and I think all marketers are facing that, right? Of how do you get the most bang for your buck? How do you get the most out of your time? How do you say stretch $1 into $500 and say, well, I might have spent $1 on this campaign and it resulted in $500 worth of business, but that business was 7 months later.
You know, in a world where everything is supposed to be measured and seen through that kind of lens and all the dashboards that are available and every tool known to man in marketing, are you finding that you have to push back on that, you know, to avoid that CFO becoming the CEO sort of question? Or are you presenting any form of metrics that are kind of tracking where things have come from, or is it more open than that kind of across the board in terms of marketing performance?
There's usually a couple different metrics you can go off of, right? There's your customer average happiness. How happy were they with the actual transaction? How easy was it for them to come in and purchase your product? And when they have a problem, how easy was that to actually solve? I have a colleague who is in pharma, and they experienced this, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, where they noticed she leads her own pharmaceutical department, and she found out that all of her adversaries were going through and really improving the customer satisfaction. They were implementing all these different customer success teams and making sure that when the customers actually had a problem, whether that was they didn't get all their pills were incorrect, there was some problem with the medication, or the pharmacy just did not have the supply chain necessary to keep up the amount of drugs that they needed, that at the time, implementing the customer success team was immensely costly and had no benefit. But within the next year to 2 years, all companies who had not implemented a better customer success team had fallen off the face of the earth. So there's a lot of those things of the how happy is the transaction, how well did it go, And then how many repeat customers, how many people do you have coming back, or how many people are just recommending you? One of the ways that I would say you can show how effective the campaigns can be is afterwards, you go to the random people who are in your industry and are they talking better about you? And if you propose yourself as somebody, and this is one of the benefits of going to a trade show and expanding that net that you can throw, going in and just saying, hey, this is one thing that I used to do at a previous company. Go to a bar, but there's a trade show, talk to the people there and see what they know about your company. If they don't know a lot, that's probably not good. But if they do know a lot and it's not good, it's also not good. But then if they know some things, but and they don't know too much about what you do, but they at least know that your customers are having a good experience, well, there you go. You start to having far better customer outcomes. It's spreading around and there can be that non-transient, or that I should say that transient experience from your customers going in from one to another of just, I like the idea of, I don't know who originally said it, but once you have a thought, 20 other people have the exact same thought. So once you put the ideas out there that your customers are happy, you keep making them happier, it will get around that you are treating your customers well.
How do you, and part of this recipe is really about lighting many fires and seeing which one takes, or which ones take potentially. Do you have any, I mean, is it just a gut feel as when you're maybe lighting too many, when you're spreading yourself too thin? Or do you have any kind of science or advice behind it that you would share?
It's very difficult to go to, especially if you're proposing a marketing campaign, and say, this is based off just my gut, right? They probably won't take that answer very well of, I think this will do very well. Despite the fact that that might be, I wish I could remember her name. She was a poker player who wrote a book about decision making. And she wrote this great book, you know, the twice bitten, once shy, or once bitten, twice shy, where you, even though you go and you implement a correct decision, and if it doesn't work out, it still could be the correct decision the next time. Trying to advocate for people that things that they feel on instinct could be correct for a reason that they don't know. Like I discussed earlier about why is advocating for the snacks on an airplane a good decision, despite it not being about the airplane or the service or anything. You could instead, you just get a great amount of feedback or feeling about how good the airline is going to be based on the snacks that they serve, could go into the psychological impact of the tiny adjustments that you can make to change the perspective of somebody who is coming in as a client. And you have those massive butterfly effects that carry out, that can change the entire perspective of your customer to make them actually really enjoy the experience. Like I would say at Hibachi, of going in and you could really entirely change the perspective of your potential customer.
I think that's really interesting.
I don't, it's been a fun conversation, Alec. I think it's really, we're really challenging listeners to say, to think about how they can navigate the challenge that they have overall, that marketing is expected to have a perfect answer to your point, this notion of deterministic decision making. And I really like the challenge that you brought forward today. It's an interesting one, I think, for our listeners to try to ponder and digest and integrate into their work. Thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I was really glad to be able to go over some of my experiences in the marketing campaign, going over how it's not all just one-to-one experiences, how to improve your actual customer outcome, not optimizing for the efficiency of the transaction, and just trying to think about from the, I always like to go back to the Charles Stachy, when there was a beggar that he found outside and he had a sign that said, "Help, I'm hungry." And he wrote under it, "I'm hungry and it's spring," and it completely changed the amount of donations he was getting because it changed the perspective that people had of the beggar.
Yeah, fascinating.
Thanks a lot, Alec.
Well, thank you.